start we're going to start with item 11, Commissioner's Report, and then we're going to proceed out of order for 1406 and 1408, because there are people who are here planning to testify. So, Mr. Crandall, if you want to start with...
So is the PowerPoint. This is busy, gets here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they're pulling it up now? Please. And then members, just to let you know that whenever we finish state board meeting, either immediately after or the next day, we have a quick debriefing. All employees that had anything to do with the meeting, we run upstairs in my office, we sit around, make sure that, okay, what information did this board member need, whose responsibility is that. You've received in your inbox this little form right here, and it's from the last board meeting. Simply says, what was the board member's request, who was it assigned to, and where is it in that status? Mm-hmm. You'll see most of the things from last board meeting have been completed. Like, for example, legislative updates, school finance discussion on the CD website. Dana handled that, and here's the link to it. So you'll see that in your inbox.
Over emails? Is that what you're
talking
about?
Yes. I emailed it about an hour or so.
Yeah. This is just a status report from last board meeting of all the...
Got it.
Things. Okay. We'll create a new one of these sheets tomorrow afternoon based on this board meeting.
Thank you.
Just make you aware of that.
Remind us of what we said. That's really an excellent idea given our short-term memory issues.
We may have squeezed some things in there.
What?
Seems unfair.
I don't remember that. Can you play that tape back?
Yeah, we do still have audio.
Yeah.
Just in case you were thinking of that.
Okay.
I know.
Hey, I want to share with you, I had a wonderful opportunity to visit with the Joint House and Senate Education Committee and then the Joint Budget Committee this morning to talk about just K-12 education in Colorado and where we want to go under ESSA. I appreciate so much the big conversations we've had this morning. We've talked about accountability, we've talked about assessment, talked about waivers that play into that. That's an important conversation. And so I want to go through this kind of quickly just so you understand where I'm coming from, and hopefully it is in alignment with you as my boss also. This last Tuesday, I had an opportunity to be in the room with Lamar Alexander. Katie, you were there, yes. Katie was there with him, Gretchen. And he said, guys, the next 12 months will determine what your education system looks like for the next 15 years. And we truly do, as you've heard a couple times here today, we have tremendous flexibility under ESSA to do what fits Colorado's needs. We have standards review coming up in 17-18, so I mean, we'll have a new assessment system coming on. We'll talk more about that. But we have a critical decision to make. Remember, this was being made to the lawmakers as well as to us here. Number one, do we want to be a low-skill, low-wage state? And believe it or not, there are states who, whether on purpose or not, have this strategy. They want to be the mecca to call centers and low-cost, low-wage manufacturing, things like that. I am, after having lived here now for 90 days, I do not think Colorado has any interest in being a low-skill, low-wage state, driving our economy. And I appreciate that, because we want high-skill, high-wage. We truly want to be the number one state for work, play, and life. But here's what matters. That doesn't happen by accident. Low-skill, low-wage does happen by accident. You do nothing. And that's your default. That's where you end up. To go the other direction is that hard work, that hard lifting we were talking about and doing today. Tough decisions, best interest of the kids. And I even threw up the word humility up there because I know I have some positions that I'm going to have to change. Maybe bills I passed, things I believed in passionately that I realize may not fit in a long-term, high-achieving, high-benchmark vision. Real fast, most important thing I wanted lawmakers to understand is that education, and we really hit on that earlier today, it's a very slow process. And it's not till the end of 10 years when you look back that you say, wow, look at all we've achieved, or wow, why didn't we do something different 10 years ago? And so we're frustrated that we can't have new assessment next month, we can't have new accountability in the next 2 months. And it takes time, and it's a very slow-moving ship. But if you do it right, at the end of 5-10 years, it's incredible. I just wanted to show, Colorado does many, many things very well in the K-12 space. This is just one of them. This is 15 years data of AP for five courses. And it's 10 years ago, 5 years ago, last year. The blue is the test that was given. And so you'll see computer science, chemistry, and then the red.
Number of tests
that were given. And then the red is the number who passed. Interesting because there's certain ones we're definitely doing well. It's fun that CalCAB were so high. And just once again, congratulations to Denver for being the number one AP district in the world. That was a huge accomplishment. Statistics, something interesting. The rate of growth in the number of tests is far outpacing the passing rate on the same number of tests. So interesting things there. And then, of course, computer science, such potential. You may have seen it in my Thursday thought 2 weeks ago. There's the brand new computer science principles AP class. The computer science class right here that they reference is a very high level. You're going to be a programmer. That's who takes that class. They realize that the rest of the world wants to take a class that teaches about computers, the internet, things like that, and they've come up with that new course. Important point here, I love this. I use this quote all the time from McKinsey. The greatest threat to Colorado is going to be around our teachers. Oops. Top performing countries, it's the highly qualified teacher in front of all students. I truly believe this is the greatest threat because all of the things that we want to do around apprenticeships, AP, IB, anything, without a great teacher in the classroom, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. This was the scary chart, number of kids who are going into education. Dr. Shuffle, I'm sure you could have some conversations about this with me. This is not a good sign for the future if we really need high-quality teachers in the classroom. So teachers, number one. Here's our number two concern. Okay, and this is really where the rubber meets the road. If I get straight A's, I have a 4.0, I get a high school diploma, and the school gets paid. If I get D's, a 1.0, I get a high school diploma, and the school gets paid. Even worse, I actually get a little extra money. Until this, I call this the perverse incentive. Until this is fixed, we will never be the top performing state in the country, top performing in the world. When a school gets paid regardless of the output of their product, it's very hard to overcome that. In fact, it's almost impossible to overcome that. Another big issue we have here is zip code still determines way too much in Colorado. These two things are not unique to Colorado, but if we want to be the number one state in the country, we're going to have to find solutions to these long term. It was tough to listen to Kevin Schott. He and I had a long phone call last week. What school district is he? About 60, 70 miles out east on I-70.
Kevin Schott.
Deer Trail.
One of those deers.
He said, I will offer free housing, utilities, $3,000 signing bonus, come in at salary schedule plus five, 4 day week, hour and 10 minutes from Denver, and I will not find a single qualified math teacher to come to our district. There's too few of them. So even with that package, he cannot find them. So it's a tough conversation when we consider all the things that we're talking about. Things I've just observed the first 90 days in Colorado. We are in a fantastic situation. We have all the pieces in place to be number one. We need to just kind of organize them a little bit. And I really do believe this. I love the state board's attitude toward innovation and waivers. The ability to grant districts and schools the freedom to do big things. That sends a very, very strong signal where the opinion of the board is.
We're just having a hard time hearing you.
Are you okay? I was just trying to get the temperature right. Go ahead and close it.
Okay, it's a little hard to hear.
Go ahead and close it.
Come on to the front. We're not fighting.
Go sit right up front. Moving forward here. What will it take to be number one? This is the work we have ahead of us for the next year. An education system based on performance and mastery. As I just said, we can no longer allow a student to get a D minus in first grade, move forward, D minus second grade, D minus third, all the way through high school. It doesn't work. Students need to be able to try a task, retry it again until they master that, then move on. The good news is NCSL took 40 lawmakers over the last 2 years. D's, R's, far right, far left. They've been meeting once a quarter across the United States. They rotate different places, different experts come in. In August, they're rolling out their plan of what this might look like, a performance-based mastery system. At their national conference in Chicago, they're rolling that out. A funding model right here that's focused on outcomes. My vision, what I kind of heard, is that there will be a base level. Then you've got some specific buckets for ELL, special needs, low income. Then you've got incentives. Here's the big one. We've got to find a way.
Can I just stop you? For specific categories, then rewards for desired outcomes. Do schools who are already performing high, do they need rewards?
Are they? I would say yes, because do we know if they're performing at their highest potential? The phrase that I always use is, it is not enough for a district to be performing at the level of its demographics. What I mean is, if I have middle-income kids, do I perform at the level I would expect of middle-income? That's not good enough.
It isn't. But you also have high-needs areas or high-needs schools that really do need help, and they need to be incentivized to possibly even pay teachers more.
I agree, and though that's up to...
Well, rewards for desired incomes doesn't say...
Outcomes.
doesn't say only high-achieving kids.
No, it will definitely be for...
But usually how it is.
Oh, no. What that means is incentivize the behavior we want. If we want kids who can't read to learn to read, Florida did a great job with incentivizing reading by third grade. Got some incredible results out of that. I hear what you're saying now. No, we would incentivize at all different levels.
Okay. There. I'm sorry.
No. An assessment system that measures performance and mastery. There is not, in the United States currently, New Hampshire's toying with it, there is not a good assessment system out there right now. All of them take months to get the results back. All of them are at the end of the year, far removed from the classroom. The model that we want, we will develop during the ESSA pilot assessment. We will be one of the 7 states that gets to put together the next generation of assessments, or the pilot of those. Closer to the instruction, some competency-based. Go in the direction that you talked about earlier this morning, Dr. Flores. There's a great book, it's about 40 years old, called The Game of Work, and it asks the question, why are you willing to go golfing in 110 degrees? Why are you willing to go snow skiing in minus 20 degrees? Play 4 hours of basketball, things like that. And the point is, it's because of how rapidly you get the feedback. You know within 4 seconds if you're a good golfer or a bad golfer. You may even know faster than that. Our assessment system needs to give students that kind of feedback to know if they're on the right path. That's why video games are so popular with a large number of kids. They know instantly, and then they get to try again. That's not how our assessment model works at all. Accountability model that incentivizes desired outcomes. And then finally, call it wicked student engagement. Today's kids are not going to sit there and face the front of the classroom with a textbook and get much out of it. There are so many things that we could work with the districts to build into this in our charters. All right, let's talk timing for a minute. I'm a little disappointed at how long it's going to take, but I understand why, to get the rules out. So as you know, they're in negotiated rulemaking right now. There are several areas where they're just not coming to agreement. The U.S. Department of Ed is drafting rules simultaneously. They'll be out for public comment in, I think we're thinking, July, August. Could be as early as June, parts of it, but they'll be out for a 60-day public comment period. Then the department will get them back. We expect them to be out about November or December. Even the rules for the pilot assessment, we were hoping those would be out in July and we could put in our application in October. They won't come out to that same time frame. One of the things we'd like to do as a department and very closely with the board is work on a state plan for education. What is Colorado's vision for education? We're required by law to go out and listen to every single group out there, far right, far left, parents' charters, organizations that you wouldn't normally even equate with education. All of those groups need to have input into our state plan that we will turn in April, May, June of 2017. Here's our plan right now. We're going to do some quick listening May and June all over the state, and not just CDE. There's multiple groups out there doing ASCD had one last week that they put together kind of on their own. PVC is doing some things. And then all your different alphabet groups are doing theirs. What we're going to do is we're going to take all the comments we receive for the first 60 days, put it into a document. We're calling it a working plan. Distribute that working plan across the state, both via web, electronically, and hard copy, and say, this is what we're hearing. Give us your specific individual feedback. Is this, do you think people are right from what we're hearing? Wrong? What would you want to see in this plan? Do that for all of, we're going to do that for July and August. Collect those in September. Then have a statewide summit around ESSA in October, where we lay out kind of almost like a finalized draft that we would present in October. We then have it open for comment for another couple months, because then we would turn it in to the U.S. Department of Ed March, April, May. The point we want to make to everyone, I want to make, is lots and lots of opportunity for comment for everybody. All of your constituents, those you agree with and those you don't, will have lots of opportunity to weigh in on what this plan looks like. And then it goes to the, and correct me if I say it wrong, it does come before the state board for their final approval, and the governor's office also has a chance to weigh in on it. Most important point I made at the end is the only reason I came to Colorado is because Colorado's positioned to be the top performing state in the country. Not a lot of states have those pieces in place. So let's aim for the top. Do that part. Mr. Chair, I want to make just a couple of quick comments about some things that I got a call from a charter management group in Arizona that flew up here last week. They happen to be the largest group in Arizona. They've expanded into Nevada. They're trying to go into Texas. And they came up for some meetings here that the department and the, don't call them the, not the Bureau, not the Institute, the Charter.
CSI.
League of Charters. League, thank you. I forgot the right word. The League of Charters, they put on a joint training. It's a 2-day boot camp for anyone who wants to open up a charter school in Colorado. I want to give a special shout out to Christina Jean, Peg McMillan, and Kelly Rosensweig, who participated on behalf of CDE in that. What made it cool is these folks from Arizona flew back home. They called me that night and said it was the best one they'd ever been to of the states they had been to as far as organized. They got the information they needed that would help them. So positive news. Now it is, because our law is different, they said, now, you know, Rich, the problem is you have to find a district. And so it's not like Texas or Nevada where you can go to an authorizing board to go straight out. So they said, we definitely want to be in Colorado, but we need to figure out the mechanics of how that works when you partner with a district.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
by all means. So you were meeting with parents who want to start charters?
It was some parents from Arizona who have built their own charter management organization.
I see.
They have 8 already. They just opened 1 in Nevada. Now I don't know for sure, but this boot camp is open to anybody to attend who wants to open up a charter. And they hold it how often? Any idea?
I'm not sure.
Twice a year?
Yeah.
So do companies come to parents and say, let's help you start a charter? Or do parents come to companies and say, we want to help you manage the school we envision?
That's a very good point you bring up. My experience is a group says, hey, we sense that there's dissatisfaction in this area. I was amazed at the amount of research they'd already done on Colorado as these folks talked to me. And they listened to comments from parents. We're not satisfied. We'd like another option. They then get a small group that builds into a larger group. They won't do, if the parent demand's not there, then they won't come. And they have to have some early parents.
We've had that here. We've had some appeals from national charter companies.
Right.
Which we call basically a charter group looking for a district, which is one of the reasons we want to make sure there are parents there that want.
Yeah, I just don't want to see us flip the table on who's driving it.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, now, and I appreciate that comment. One of the things that I've learned about charters is it is there's the academic side, and then there's, it is a business. It is a true business with payroll and things like that. And you have to have that expertise in both. And there is a critical mass number also. In Arizona, you need about 100 kids to really make it work. People trying to start a charter with 35 kids, 40 kids, and quickly, you know, the finances.
Sure, 100
doesn't matter. Nowadays, especially, with some of those things.
Excuse me, Commissioner. What was the name of this?
Legacy Group.
Legacy Group.
Like I said, they I think they have about 14,000 kids in Arizona, their first school in Nevada. The whole point I wanted to make is I like that they were pleased with the training that Colorado was providing. They may not be happy with all the laws on the books, but that's a different conversation for another day for that piece. Mr. Chair, our ESSA timing, our ESSA work is going to just consume everything over the next 12 months. As literally so much gets shifted back from the feds to us, we're going to be coming before the board constantly. We'll always have an ESSA component to every board meeting between now and June of 2017. So a little heads up, I did, as we met with Pat last week, we said, Pat, break it up into some bite-sized pieces. It can be very, very overwhelming what has to be accomplished. But if we break into bite-sized pieces, work with our partners, work with everyone, it'll be a very positive.
I don't want to interrupt you. Can I still question you?
Please, by all means.
So I always get concerned when we do these large tours and we have all these entities that we're visiting with and so forth. It's great to get all this input. But there are really basic underlying assumptions that probably board members would like to weigh in on as far as what direction Colorado goes. And I get concerned that when we do these large tours, because I've been a part of them, that the teachers and the parents' voices get drowned out by the entities that have certain interests in the outcomes. How shall we guard against that, and how shall we ensure that the focus of the board members and the assumptions that they're using to drive how they might look at a proposed plan, how are we going to ensure that that's driving it on the front end and not commenting on it on the back end?
Absolutely, and I appreciate that comment. We're going to have to put that structure in place of where the seven board members want to be. We would love your feedback almost immediately on it as we start to gather. We are holding meetings in both the afternoon and the evening specifically for the purpose of getting parents at the evening meetings. We have a communication strategy they've put together to get word out in those communities. The whole reason for the evening meeting was for parent participation. That. We'll report back on what's successful and what's not. Mm-hmm. That will be real blunt.
Maybe each of us should meet with you on some of the points in the PowerPoint so that we can talk about, do we embrace the direction so far laid out or not?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We'd love that there. And at the same time as that, we would love to have board members at any of these meetings in May. We'll have more in June, more in July, more in August. But any board member who wants to attend any of the six, we would love to have your participation in those. So,
I suggested that we videotape them when I send out my my email to board members. And I was just wondering if possibly that could be a conversation all over the state. And I don't know if PBS or would be interested in having these. We might need some sponsors, you know, so that these could be aired so that other members, all members of the state, could listen to what Grand Junction says or, you know, that part, or District 3 says, District 1 thinks. And I think that would be a really great conversation for bringing us together in this endeavor, because I think it's going to be it's a great challenge, but at the same time it's a great opportunity, and I think we need to get as many people to buy into it as possible, and I think if people feel they're left out, and we need to do as much as possible to get everybody to feel as if, not that it, you know, I think we just need to do our best to include as many people as possible in this endeavor.
One of the big ideas that we're really talking about, we will move forward with this as we figure out the logistics, is inviting groups to host an ESSA listening session. There's no way that any of us know every single group out there mm-hmm. who wants to weigh in on this, but if we're very public, and make it very public, if you would like to have an ESSA listening session in your community, your group, we are all over that. We have, you know, we will make that happen. We'll come to you over the next 6 months.
Dr. Schroeder and then Dr. Shuffler.
So two things. One, I'm a little frustrated that we're calling it ESSA, which makes it sound like we're doing what the feds are asking us to do. Yeah. And I think we're doing what we're asking you to do.
So Colorado Education
Colorado plan.
Plan.
Whatever. I'm not naming the name, but would look like, I'm encouraging us to think about it a little bit differently. But the second question is, when you do a listening tour, you're asking what? It's important that we know what the framework is. What are the questions that we're asking? And so, can they be... how can we be sure that they're specific enough that we really get actionable feedback from folks rather than pie in the sky?
Absolutely. Thank you.
And could we be part of that? Could we be part of that discussion as we were part of the discussion when we were looking for you and we came together and formulated those questions and went out into the field and asked those questions? Because in that... in what we did in finding the new commissioner, you, we've tried to bring in as many people in the state as possible. And we did go out into the various regions, and we did ask questions about what, you know, the people wanted in education. And so...
Dr. Shovel?
So I think that it's a great discussion as to how we get great input and how we unpack the details. And what I would say is just that the public, I think, feels very much as though, even though it's perhaps attended listening tour, at least the public I talked to, they've been at listening tours, but they've really been out of the loop as far as what the eventual outcome is. So, for example, Common Core got pushed through, and there were like 16% of the public that even heard about it after it was passed. And then all of a sudden, parents saw Common Core aligned on the textbooks, and 2 years later, suddenly the issue becomes an issue. But they were late to the party big time. And you look at a document like this on workforce readiness and all these laws coming into Colorado being considered. This tome was on the website in an obscure location. 4 people looked at it or something. It was changed. A few more looked at it. But these documents are what is driving a lot of what you're proposing. And the public feels very much confused by it, overwhelmed by it, lacking in implication, understanding implications. So I just think we have to be very thoughtful about, is this really a tour to just expose the high-level points as opposed to what does this really mean for your child and the data of your child and how this is going to influence this child's future and the future of our nation? Or is this kind of a feel-good, get around and let everyone feel heard, but in reality we already know the outcome? And I just think that the latter has been very characteristic of the way we've addressed reform efforts in this state. And it, as you can see, parents coming to these meetings, you know, they're, you know, why is my child taking a survey sponsored by ACT, SAT, supposedly voluntary, and yet look at all these objectionable questions. Why doesn't that stop? I don't know. Can it stop? What is in this document?
I have not read that. And so, Dr. Shuffler, you...
Well, I've read it.
No, I appreciate it.
I'm just saying it's a great...
But to suggest that a PowerPoint that I put together out of my own mind based on some... that was driven by some document I've never seen...
Right.
...isn't quite fair.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there are these white papers out there that are very extensive, that are outside Colorado, that move into our state, influence legislation, and are indirectly influencing our agenda. So I'm just saying, as we do this, can we do it differently than we've done it in the
thank
past?
Thank you. In fact, that's the number one. In fact, I'm so glad you brought that up. And I'm glad you brought up Common Core. Yeah. Every state out there, Wyoming, it was 14 listening stops, mm-hmm. and they kept track of who attended. And they knew who attended. I think they probably had video of who attended. Arizona was 23 meetings. Mm-hmm. Exact same thing. You know, we had 12 people over 14 meetings who attended it. And so when we started out this listening tour, now keep in mind, folks, we're going to learn a ton about what's working and what doesn't. I was very clear with my other people, though, it can never be the way it was in the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just making that up because you said it also. We can never go that route and say, what do you mean? We went out there just because you didn't show up to the meeting. It's not my fault. That can never be a response to a parent or anybody ever again. We will learn some things. Now, everything is on the table. There is no, we have no predestined, here's what we want out of a system, and let's, we're going to guide you to our answer. Not in the least is that. We truly are out there to listen. There will be about an hour, hour and a half of education meeting, and we're going to take the presentation that we got in ESSA, the very, some high-level points, accountability, assessment, the 5%. Here's things that are required. What's important to you? Then as we do a listening session in June, we'll probably tweak the way we do it. Say, okay, what did we learn that didn't work in our first one? And then also, you never need to ask if you are invited to a listening session. The door is always open to everything that we're doing. Complete transparency as we go across the state on this.
Yes, Ms. Goff.
I agree and appreciate that very much. I also have a real balance of feelings about that, and I'd be interested to know what, when we say the word participate in, and you think about that in regards to the intention of these meetings, where is the focus? If the focus is on the public, and it's one of the early checks is how aware are they, first of all, of what this brand new picture of our lives is going to mean, that's impossible to predict in a state of population the size we have and the potential for how many people will be at these meetings. And we don't know what their level of awareness is or how in touch they are. So speaking for myself, because I think this is how I do better work when it comes to constituency. I just be quiet.
Yep.
And I listen to what they're asking and what they're worried about and what they're happy about. And I kind of just keep my head open. I do a lot of that at these meetings too. But so when we say we're welcome to participate, what level of activity does that mean on our part? My own feeling right now, before we've really started this round of it, after a few years ago of traveling the state doing that other conversation, what do we want to do with this? I just believe I'm more comfortable. It's better. I operate better if I hear the big picture. Then I have time to think about it. I, of course, want to and would look forward to talking with all of the rest of you, see what your impressions are. I think we come to, most of the time, this board does pretty well, we come to a spot where we find the common beginning point, unique common points of interest. But I'm worried that if we jump in here too soon, and it won't take too long for people to figure out that we are the body that does ultimately have the approval of this plan, does that run the risk of squelching somebody's open participation because we're in the room, or a lot of us are in the room, or not? So in a way, maybe the ability to hear it remotely or whatever, that's kind of intriguing to me. But I'm just still not quite there yet with all seven of us being in a room full of people who are really entering this kind of public engagement for the very first time. I don't know. That's where I am.
Well, I don't know about seven people.
Well, but up to...
I think we have to understand that we have to be part of that initial planning or think of these concepts of plans that are
absolutely
that are out there, or not creating them, but know that that's what our constituents are talking about, because they do talk to us and we do kind of understand. We don't want to stifle, but we do want to hear. So the other idea that I had was that they be videotaped and that we could hear them. I mean, it's something else to have written comments about what people said, but another part, which technology does allow us, and that is to be there without being there.
Yeah. No, I think there's a balance. I think there's a really good
Let me respond real fast if I may, Ms. Jane's comments there. This is how we envision this happening. the first hour, it's a three-hour meeting. First hour and a half is an education, because I think you're exactly right. The majority of people across the state of Colorado do not know what ESSA is, do not know what's required of it. So somewhere between 60 and 90 minutes of that as you go through different sections. Then it is just like state board meeting. We would probably lead with this question. If we were to put together a 5 to 10 year plan for education, and we would be the Department of State Board of Education for Colorado, what would be important to you to be in that plan? And then just sit back and listen. Kind of like Steve was doing today. He took notes about everyone who spoke, and then at the end kind of gave some direction based on those comments. We will bring those comments back verbatim. It's not a bad idea at all to film it just for documentation in case we need to reference something back.
Well, no. I want to watch it.
You bet. Love commercials and everything.
Fast forward.
I don't want... And I guess the only thing I can say is, hey, don't judge our future on the past yet. Now, if we screw up and you don't like the way the first meeting went or the second one, by all means, we'll tweak it. We have no hidden agenda. We want what's best for Colorado, and we need to hear from multiple groups. And I think what we're going to have to do at the end is we'll have a log of every single group we met with, and then you're going to have to come through and say, Rich, you guys haven't met with this group yet or this group, and then we'll probably have to call and reach out to them and say, hey, could we come and present to you to hear your perspective on this? Now, keep in mind, we've got 6 to 8 months to do this. It's not all going to happen in the six main meetings.
It's okay, Ms. Matnick, and then Dr. Shaw.
Okay, so I don't have the email in front of me or the news release about you're going to several different locations. Who do you expect to be in the audience?
Absolutely.
Who are you going to be listening to?
Are
they going to be listening to you?
We're publicizing in every medium we can down there. Now, like I said, we'll present, hey, here's why we're here, here's what the new law is, but this is only one reason why we're here. We want to put together a statewide plan for education. What would be important? And then literally for the second hour and a half, we just sit back. We don't even speak. We'll just take notes. We'll listen. People can come up and make comments. To be honest, there's not going to be 200 people in the room. Even though we advertise it for everybody to come and talk about, where Colorado's going in education, I would love it if there were.
Well, a couple of things. Did we decide to create a statewide plan for education?
We have to.
Yeah.
We have to turn one in March.
To the feds?
Correct.
Ah, okay.
But here's the, as I met with Secretary King last Thursday, I said, we're not turning in a statewide plan to comply with ESSA. We're turning in the true plan of where we want to go over the next 10 years, and we'll tell you how ESSA supports that. It's not like a waiver request where we're asking permission to do something.
And my next question is, so we have CASE, CASB, CEA going along.
At this first one.
They're going along for the purpose of listening as well, or are they?
Nope, they want to listen as well.
Okay. One final thing I want to say is that, and I think Jane mentioned this, is that I think we all need to keep it in mind that we can and we should listen. And we should listen to as many what I would call stakeholders, parents and taxpayers, about the best way to implement this. But ultimately, we make the decision. We're elected to do that. We're not elected to represent any one group. So I just think it is good for us to remember that.
Yeah. Dr. Shovel.
I guess my thought would be, and again, I appreciate the presentation, I guess I'd like to see this board do the heavy lifting on sketching out direction and then listening, as opposed to listening, getting all this information back,
right.
Huge reports written, we tweak the edges and basically feel like, hey, they've spent months on this and hundreds of people, that's what we always get. We've been to X number of schools, X number of locations, rural, urban, and so forth, this many stakeholders, thousands of comments, and this is what they suggested. Are we going to, at that point, say, well, we don't think that's a good direction? I mean, in reality, that pushes us in a direction by default. So I would prefer that this board have the tough discussions about direction,
that's
and then
right.
You go out and get feedback and, of course, listen. And we're always willing to tweak it based on our direction and then all the other information that we gather.
Mr. Crandall?
No, I wasn't. I didn't comment. That's, yeah, I
Dr. Flores?
And also, I think that we do have organizations and groups such as Colorado Succeeds, Democrats for Education Reform, and all these other groups that I think they need to be separate. I mean, we can have one for those organizations that they can come to, but we need to have, we need to listen to people. I mean, I'm over there at the legislature all the time. Who comes most of the time? It's the same lobbying groups, these same groups that we hear about. We need to hear what just everyday people, you know, who have kids in school, who may not have kids in school, in those communities, in those areas, what they think about. And not these lobbying groups that we hear about all the time and their reports, because we read their reports. And it has to be something different than from those people.
Point taken.
But I also agree with Dr. Scheffel that I think we need to craft that, those questions and that, those ideas.
We do. And to the extent that we have differences of opinion on the board, we need to go deep and figure out why, look at underlying assumptions, look at data, look at what works, look at what hasn't worked for the past 30 years, and to pass this out, I think, beyond our purview, and then comment on it later, I think is derelict of duty on the part of the board.
Mm-hmm. Further questions for Mr. Crandall? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Crandall. We'll now proceed to out of order. If we're ready, I presume we're ready, Ms. Birdsall, for item 14.06, a waiver request from Lewis Palmer School District 38 for a waiver to CRS 22-7-104, paren 2, paren A. Early childhood readiness. Okay. Ms. Anthony, are you going to handle this?
Sure, I can handle this. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chair. Yes, this was a school readiness assessment waiver request that came from Lewis Palmer School District. We went through the normal staff review process, and you have those materials in front of you. A few other potential questions came up, and so we asked the district to be here if you would like to ask them any questions about the detail of their replacement plan on school readiness. So with that, I'll let you decide if you would like to bring the district up to ask any questions.
Sure, if they'd like to make a quick presentation, that'd be fine. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We're happy to be here and happy to answer any questions about our waiver request. We appreciate the time that the State Board has given us to answer any questions. One of the things I wanted to highlight was we began this process in September of last fall. It is actually a thought and idea we've had for quite some time. We have a standards-based report card that we believe captures all of the data we need to determine school readiness. I know that some of the comments we got back from staff were around it being a checklist, but I want to reiterate that TS Gold is a checklist as well. So we feel that our teachers gather comprehensive data. It stays out of the digital realm, which is a concern for our community, and they have high-quality data. And I would say that our success in demonstrating proficiency in our kids later on demonstrates that we do a good job of identifying whether our students are ready for the next level of learning. And I'd be happy to turn it over to Sheila Bevin to add anything else.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here. Our teachers in September, as I was speaking with kindergarten teachers, They certainly had overwhelming support for us to move forward with this waiver, as well as parents. During our public hearing meeting, we had three parents comment, and they were absolutely supportive of that. And their comments, our parent comments, as well as our board comments, were also overwhelmingly in support. They were a fan of teachers having more time with students, less tracking and paperwork, in a dual system, so we would just focus on a one system based on standards. Our parents told us our teachers are qualified and able to assess our students well. They're very talented. They are in favor of keeping the assessments within the school district, and as Karen indicated, we would be able to keep our student data private, meant for the audience that is most important is our parents. Additionally, we have measurement instruments, individual profiles of progress in reading, writing, math, art, physical education, music, academic success, and behavior. And our board has given us permission to attempt to bring back local control to the Lewis Palmer School District.
Any questions from members of the board? Let me start with Ms. Anthus, if no one else has any questions. This board spent a lot of time trying to drive some change and reduction in TS goals, time-consuming, limiting the data they collected, and also things like requiring positive opt-in for video and pictures of children, which we accomplished after, I think, about a year of back and forth. And then we started receiving requests for waivers from this after we had, and actually during that process. And I'm not sure that, and perhaps you can tell me, does this waiver request contain some of the same student protections that we have now in our contract with TS Gold? For example, that they may not photograph students or take videos without permission of the parent. Is that part of the policy? Do you know?
I do not know that. I'm not sure if our staff member, Melissa Colesman, knows that. She reviewed all the documents in more detail, but that might be a question better asked of the
student. Perhaps you can answer, is there a specific prohibition in your waiver request for against the collection of videos and pictures of children?
No, because it wasn't required. That was not one of the things we were required to report on in the waiver request, but I can tell you that we've made a commitment to not do that.
But it's not part of the request.
It's not required to be in the waiver request. There was no place to actually add that information.
Okay. And then in your proposal, in your waiver, do you propose to collect more data or less data than is required, than we now have in our contract with TS Gold?
There are 55 objectives, I believe, in the TS Gold, and there are certain checkpoints throughout the year. I would say it's the same data that our standards-based report card is. They're very much aligned. And so it would be similar. However, it would be removing one of the systems, and so we'd only have one system for our teachers and reporting on our students to our parents' progress.
So the answer is yes, we collect more data. No, we collect less data.
Similar.
The same data.
Correct.
All right. Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
So I see your report card, but report cards come out quarterly, or what? Now I'm trying to figure out whether parents learn more or less about the progress, or earlier or later, about the progress of their kindergarten.
They come out by trimesters, three times a year.
Okay. And how does it work with TS Gold?
When
do parents get the reports on
I mean, I think the initial evaluation is like the first 30 days, is it not?
Yes, for TS Gold.
Right.
Yes, and then the report card does not come back out until the end of first trimester.
TS Gold does not report out?
No, the standards-based report card, I'm sorry. However, standards measurement of progress is an ongoing piece for them in terms of individual profiles. And that's under the measurements.
So how do parents see that? I'm trying to figure out.
Parent-teacher conferences, sending them home through different folders, having those conversations. Teachers readily call parents and inform them of their students' progress.
So if you have two systems and they're extremely similar, why do you have to have yours, other than that you...
We feel it's a stronger system, and we feel it's more specific to the standards-based.
And there's not a crosswalk that shows me that.
It's a very similar crosswalk that you would have seen with District 20, because it's a standards-based report card.
Ms. Andes, one of the things that this board is required to do, and or the department is required to do, is accumulate data from what is now becoming an increasing number of sources to then deliver a report to the General Assembly on readiness. When we originally started granting waivers, I had hoped that, and I think presumed, and obviously inaccurately, that we started with small school districts who could demonstrate a variety of reasons that the existing procedures were burdensome. We reduced that burden, and instead of kind of quelling the request for waiver, somehow we seem to have accelerated it. And can you tell me if you're convinced that now how many ever waivers we have, and if we keep granting them, that the reports you're going to get are easily compatible so that we can give the General Assembly the information they've requested?
Mr. Chair, this board did make some decisions about how that data would be collected, and actually sort of, changed the way it would be collected. So I think districts can now, would have to do that crosswalk with their systems in order to make sure that it fits within the sections that you all approved. That is one of the pieces we noted in the last section of the staff response, which is the more different systems there are out there, there are some comparability issues, perfect comparability issues, with those different systems. I will say that probably a lot of the waivers we're receiving now have probably been in the works for a little while. So I don't know if this some of the decisions that were made with TS Gold and such will stem, the tide later on. Some of these were underway before that.
Okay. All right. Any, Dr. Schroeder?
I just think we need to take a time out on this and figure out whether the changes that were made by TS Gold made this a workable process for kindergarten readiness. I just don't believe that the legislature asked us to check kindergarten readiness and then have it nicked away until there isn't anything that we're actually providing for them in terms of wanting to know whether the kids are ready and whether there are some improvements and whether kids are ready. So my inclination is for us to wait just a couple of years, and if there are some really good reasons for districts, especially the large districts, the small districts, what I heard when they came from waivers is we're already testing those kids in preschool, and we already have all that data, and it's a redundancy for us to be doing it again. That's different from what we're now getting. It's a completely different explanation. And I think we were sympathetic to their limited resources, but that's not what we're seeing here. We're seeing every district going back to doing their own thing, and I'm really worried about what we're going to be able to do to report appropriately and correctly what's really happening for our kiddos.
So can I ask a question?
Sure.
So tell me about the waivers you've already granted. And then how does that fit with then saying you won't be granting any more waivers because you want to take a time out when you have granted some waivers already to larger districts? And then larger.
Academy's larger, Academy's but I think that's larger. The only
Yeah, and I think that's our worry. Yeah. I think we're just seeing this snowball to the point where we no longer have anything.
Right. No longer have any uniformity.
Any uniformity,
so what
and I would say that that in part, I mean, I'm not quite through with some of the information I want to raise, but in part, I look at least two reasons for a waiver. One, you can do it better. That might be true. Or two, it presents an undue hardship. And I'm not sure you've certainly identified an undue hardship issue. It doesn't sound like you're going to be doing any less work. We have reporting format issues that I think I want to be dead confident that everybody that we develop a reporting network requirement that's solid, and then we'll have Ms. Masnick, then I'm going to ask a few more specific questions, Ms. Masnick.
I'm unclear right now. Are you currently using your own system for kindergarten readiness? Have you been using that same system for some time?
Yes, we've been using the standards-based report cards for the last 3 years.
And when you say the standards-based report card, is that what you use for your checklist as you for
yes.
kindergarten readiness? It's just a report card.
Yes, the report card is the reporting system. What the documents that follow behind that that actually gauge and measure the students' progress, we have labeled or called them individual profiles of progress.
And you've been doing that how long? Sorry?
We have been doing math for Senate Bill 191, that's the other 50% for our teachers at kindergarten, and we started with reading and writing this year, and we'll be implementing the others for the rest of the next year. Because the waiver's first 16-17 school year.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And how many, one more thing, how many students at Lewis Palmer?
Just under
6,000. Counting. That includes our charter school?
I'm sorry?
That includes our charter school, who, by the way, does have a waiver for TS Gold because that process is so much different for
Monument
charter schools.
Academy.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. They're allowed to use qualitative data.
Dr. Scheffel?
You know, I know that we tried to adjust the guidelines for the database for kindergarten readiness to try to accommodate all the pushback we had on data privacy as well as the time it took to give TS Gold and so forth. But as I look at your system, I think it's very well aligned with best practice in early childhood. The same categories are represented. Many of the same questions are represented. And I think that you'll be able to give very excellent information to the state based on the kind of data we're requesting so that we can report to the legislature percent of students ready or not ready by category. I don't see any problem with what this district has suggested. I think it's a great embracing of local control in a credible way with data, and it will allow us to meet our obligation to the legislature, and I guess I appreciate you doing what's best for your students in your district.
One of the requirements is a public participation and hearing on this topic. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you stated, Ms. Bevings, that the parents were supportive of this request, and is that correct?
Correct.
I'd like to read few letters to you, if you don't mind me taking a few minutes, from parents I received in District 38. I'm writing to share my experience with you in the public hearing held in our district on the TS Gold waiver they were submitting to the state. I found out the meeting from a Lewis Palmer parents' Facebook page, which they found out about just a couple of hours before the public hearing. I do understand the district followed the letter of the law by posting a small public notice in a newspaper, parentheses, I was never able to find it even after the fact, and by putting some meeting notices on the local post office doors. But really, if they wanted parents to attend and participate and provide transparency, why didn't they send an email through their automated system or post it on the district school website? Generally, parents receive information on everything related to the school district or school board meetings via these methods of communication. Yet for some reason, something as controversial as TF Gold, they expected parents to rely on the local newspaper and the post office. Skip a couple paragraphs. On such a hotly suggested topic, it was likely the result of not communicating through the expected or normal channels. A second letter. I was told that this entailed putting a piece of paper in the administration building, the library, and the post office, all the places that few of us ever go. They also said it was properly advertised in the paper for 4 weeks, and they claimed they have an affidavit to show that. Some have bothered to look through the papers and couldn't find any announcement. They are deceitful and would rather we would just go away. You should watch part two of the March school board meeting, and I'll spare you some of those comments. Mr. Durham, I'm a parent of a District 38 student who's actively engaged with advocating for children within our district. Describes her background. She said, I'm shocked because I've been actively involved in resisting TS Gold by writing letters to the editor and making public comments. And then she goes on with the same litany of complaints about the meeting not being properly publicized or noticed. Here's another one about the board's lack of transparency. One example of a lack of transparency applies to the waiver you will entertain this week. An absence of the attempt to ensure public participation or encourage public participation. And then the newspaper article from Complete Colorado, I guess, concerning debate and dissent on the board, which has been characterized and would appear to be fairly so as an attempt to stifle discussion of critical issues. So I think I'm going to vote no on this. I hope I'm not alone. Because I don't believe that you fulfilled your obligations, at least relative to the intent of the statute, to encourage participation and to adequately inform parents so that they can have the questions answered for themselves as to whether or not you're collecting or propose to collect more data or less data. And additionally, I think this board should impose a moratorium on these requests simply because until we can be sure that we have a system of reporting that's compatible, I think that there are serious concerns. Perhaps not all districts will have the same concerns that were expressed to me by my constituents, but it's clear that that if you knew of the dissatisfaction of the parents with this process, you at least didn't disclose it to the board, and if you didn't know, that's probably something you should have known. So I will vote no. I hope there will be others. And I think then I also hope that staff will start taking a much harder look at these until we can develop a little more coherent policy. Dr. Shuffle.
How would you respond to those letters? Who are those folks? How would you respond?
First of all, I would tell you that I do believe that you're here to decide about our waiver request and our staff's preparation of the documents. We've spent 7 months working on this, something that it takes charter schools simply a very quick fill out the form. And if we really do want to equalize education in Colorado, I think we need to think about making sure we have the same levels of local control everywhere we are. Secondly, I would say that, yes, an error was made and someone forgot to put it on the website, but it doesn't change the fact that we followed everything that we were required to do in terms of advertising it. Additionally, I don't believe that everyone that wanted to say something about that indicated, although they didn't realize it was there, they made it. And I don't think there was still any objection to what we were doing. So I'm a little concerned that our staff is being tried for an apparent political stance that we have folks taking. You guys are a board of election. You know, a board of education. You know, you've been elected. You can't always. There's always more information to everything. So I'm concerned that it sounds like, Mr. Durham, you want to punish our staff for a perceived way of how our board is currently being perceived by some folks. That feels very not right to me, and I'm going to come right out and say that. Certainly it's your prerogative. You're the Board of Education. You can do whatever you want to. But I would hope you're evaluating our waiver request based on the waiver request itself and whether it meets the requirements, not on some constituents who, quite honestly, probably regardless of what we were to do today, would have something to say.
Let me respond. I think there's no intent to punish the staff for board action. It would appear that not all that should have been done to encourage public participation was done. Is that, would you agree you perhaps should have posted on the website?
Yes, we do agree with that.
Would you agree that you should have perhaps sent an email through your ordinary email chain?
So let me speak to that, Mr. Chairman. I received guidance from the staff, CDE staff, for waiver, and I followed that directly to the point of what they have suggested to do that we needed to get done for the waiver. Additionally, parents had another opportunity because we brought this forward to the district accountability, and they unanimously supported our direction in requesting this waiver. So that was another chance that had been advertised, posted, and parents had it, and it was on the agenda for that. And lastly, with that piece of our board unanimously supported the waiver direction, the request for waiver. In their board resolution, and I have that in your supporting documents. The motion was made by Sarah Sampaio. It was seconded by Matt Clausen, and it was a vote of 5-0. And we have five board members, so all were unanimously supporting the direction.
We have a copy of that.
Correct.
Further discussion. Yes.
So this still didn't address my concern that we are just wandering off from what was the original intent, and I really want staff to have some time to help us go through when should we be giving a waiver on this, because it's really essential for the school district, and when is it just we want to do our own thing and it really goes contrary to what the legislature wanted. I feel I need to show respect to what our legislators were thinking on a bipartisan manner of what was needed in our schools. That's their responsibility. It's our responsibility to oversee, and the whole issue of local control is always one of a realistic tension, and we just have to live with that. But I'm not willing for the districts that can do the TS Gold, after all we've been through to make that more workable, to just diss it because they want to diss it, which is what I hear from some of the larger districts.
Dr. Shuffle.
Yeah, I guess I would disagree in the sense that this district is totally able to do what the intent of the law requests, which is to give metrics regarding numbers of students or percentages of students ready for transition into first grade.
And but there's more to TS Gold than that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. This district is able to answer that question, and that's what the law requires. And so to deny them the opportunity to gather these data in ways that best meet their needs, I'm not sure why we would do that, because they're able to do it given this approach. So I guess I appreciate the letters of concern from parents feeling that they weren't fully in the loop, but I don't think there are other letters that could have been written that would suggest that there was a lot of input. So I mean, these individuals apparently felt out of the loop, and the school district followed the specific requirements of CDE and submitting the waiver. So I guess I feel like they're doing what's necessary to meet the intent of the law.
So this is so odd, Deb, because when there are people who are out of the loop, you're their biggest champion. I'm just surprised mm-hmm. to see you have a completely different perspective in this particular case.
No, but I'm saying that the people who wanted to speak spoke, and so these letters
they
were
taken. They were notified.
Yeah. Not maybe the way they wanted to be in the school.
But if you really think about it, too, if you have a system, they have a system that's working, that is not different. You don't know that.
No, I don't. You're right. I don't.
You don't know that. But it's working in their community, and they're satisfied with it. And we are... Yeah,
that's clearly not true.
Well,
that's clearly not true.
Well, that's two letters, or were there more? Four letters. Okay, so there were four letters.
Of support, so that's not the whole community. It means the process didn't quite...
Right.
They didn't quite go through the whole process of making sure that people were informed and they had the opportunity to provide input.
Okay, that's four people. But I'm thinking of the basic process and the system that they have. And I have been in schools where I thought that the school system that we had was better than the district one in such an area in kindergarten. So that happens. And changing and training and all that has to happen is just a lot of time and money. And if what they're going to give the state is equal, I just don't see that if they can count to 10 and is different in TS Gold or in their reporting. So some of these, you know, we're just making too much hay out of this. And if we've given it before, I think districts deserve it just as well as do charters. And charters, how many? Some of them we probably didn't even read. We just give them out. This is a well thought out. It has the board's blessing. I think we should say, we should give them the blessing. Say yes on it.
Further discussion? Yes. Ms. Masnick?
You were talking about the lack of notice to parents. Does this waiver require that public meeting, right?
It does. It does, and I talked to a number of people, and there was certainly a consensus among those who I talked to that this meeting was not appropriately, at least in their minds, noticed because it was not noticed through the normal channels. Okay. They met the intent of the law, or not the intent, I'm sorry, they met the specifics of the law, but I'm not sure, in fact, I'm reasonably sure that they did not meet the intent of the law, which is to encourage public participation and comment. And failing that, for this specific waiver is why I fully intend to vote no. I think transparency is a good thing. I think open discussion and debate are good things. I think things that stifle open discussion and debate between parents and administration and between school board members are good things. I mean, I can't imagine for a minute that some of the things I've seen in Lewis Palmer that if I tried to impose on these board members, they would collectively hang me and should collectively hang me. So I think you have a flaw in your request in that it failed to meet the intent of the law in encouraging public participation. And I think we as a board have a larger problem in that we're, if this continues, if these waivers continue at the pace they're going for, we will soon have 179 separate systems by which the state board staff, by the CDE staff, is going to have to compile its report to the legislature. I don't think we ever we tried to pare down the original requirements for a reason so that we'd have a system that worked and yet protected privacy and did all those things. And I think we run the serious risk of now having a system where we really cannot meet our statutory obligations. And so we're not considering at the moment the moratorium question. We're simply considering the waiver request at hand. And so is there further discussion?
No.
Yes, Dr.
Can you respond to that? I mean, I think...
what the chair is saying is that you didn't have much participation in the decision. Apart from the letters that were read, what would you say to that? What participation did you have? And is that a requirement of the waiver?
It is. The only requirement of the waiver is that the public notice is placed in 3 public places within the district for at least 30 days. We do have a documentation of the public notice that was required, and I can tell you we put put out a public notice on January 7th regarding the public hearing, stating that a quorum of the members of the school board may be in attendance for the Monday afternoon meeting at on January 11th for the public hearing regarding public comment for the waiver. And we do have an affidavit from the newspaper stating that it was placed in the newspaper per guidelines and per CDE waiver guidance.
How many students do you have in your district?
Just under 6,000.
How many parents came to the meeting?
Which?
Not parents.
The DAC meeting?
The public meeting. How many people came to the public meeting?
3 parents spoke. There were probably 3 board members and a handful of teachers who are also parents within our building, or I mean our school district. Probably, what would you say, 20 people?
20
altogether. Probably, all together.
And then the DAC meeting, which we did advertise that they would be talking about the waiver. I would say we probably have about 50 people that attend our DAC regularly, and those are open to anyone who wants to come. And we actually had a few extra people show up that night for that purpose to listen to what we were talking about at the DAC meeting.
I mean, do we have guidelines on how many people need to show up at these meetings? If it's, I guess I'm confused as to why we're saying that you have to have a certain level of participation to submit the waiver. And
Dr. Scheffel, I don't believe that there's any minimum required participation, but I think there is a clear problem that's demonstrated when you have roughly 12,000 parents, if you have 6,000 people, on an issue that we all know, based on our feedback, is controversial, and you get fewer than 20 parents who are not employees of the school district.
Well, do you anticipate if a lot more people would have come, that many of them wouldn't like this waiver?
I believe that they would have been positively responding for us to move forward with the request of waiver. Additionally, prior to us having the public hearing, we had the opportunity for a public comment at board meeting, and this was one of the most, for a while, one of the most responded to public comment during our board meeting, and those parents were absolutely in favor of us moving forward for seeking the waiver.
Why? I guess my problem is of the parents I speak to, and not in Lewis Palmer specifically, but I'm just saying generally on this issue, I've never had a parent say to me, if only we could give the TS gold.
Yeah.
Never. I mean, I would find it very odd if because of your lack of posting it in some way that suddenly more parents would surface saying, please don't go this direction.
Well, some even commented that they weren't going to bother to come because they supported it. They felt like it. They would only be coming if they were disagreeing with it.
Yep.
Further discussion? Yes, Ms. Rankin.
What is our charge now? Is it possible that they could go away and come back and present again?
Yes.
So my question to you is, would you do that?
Yes, if we knew what it, again, we operated under the parameters that were given to us. So I guess if there's more information in terms of what is expected, we would need to know what that is so that we can come back and feel like we have, that we've been evaluated based on the criteria that's required versus some unknown criteria that you know, we don't know a lot.
And Chairman Dermott,
yes,
do we have something in place that if we do have a discussion about a waiver, that if we do grant it, we can check back? I mean, is there like a sunset on this? Can we put a sunset where we check back and see results of what's going on and how it may have affected?
I think that's one of the things we've discussed, that we shouldn't be granting permanent waivers just as a general rule. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been kind of a board
consensus or pretty close to consensus that we ought, that's probably the minimum we want to do. I would suggest at a minimum with this instance that if you want to go properly notice and really try to turn out a crowd and listen to their concerns, and do that and come back and report, and we can lay this over until the next meeting for consideration. If you want to do that, if you don't, that's up to you.
Is that a motion?
No, there's not a motion on the table yet. I'm just seeing if that's what they want to do, or perhaps willing to do.
We can do that. I guess my question is, will there be a minimum request? If we get three people that show up again, will that be enough?
If you do it properly and do your normal, what I would characterize and what has been characterized to me as your normal method of notification of these kinds of activities, and you get three people, and it's less of an issue. I think the complaint is that, rightly or wrongly, I have no idea, the complaint is that this question was deliberately given a short shift in terms of notice because you really didn't want a lot of public feedback.
And that is totally inaccurate.
Which is what these letters say. Maybe inaccurate, but it is the perception of some of these parents. And that perception is at least their reality.
I understand that. But I do want to caution us to assume that that was intentional. Because
I don't,
it certainly
I don't
not.
Assume it was intentional. The parents assume it was intentional.
Right.
Yes, Ms. Goff?
Question. How would deferring this even for a little while, does that impact timelines as far as kids next year enrollment? How does it have anything to do with now in relation to whenever your data will be needed?
We'd like to have it in place by next school year, obviously.
Okay, so we're not totally up against the back of the wall if there's a recommendation to
no. We're happy to come back through if that's what the board wants. I just would hate for us to do that and then come back and have the same kinds of...
I understand. Yeah.
You know, we've been at this for 7 months, and we've done a lot of work around it. It's not just about the public meeting and about that. It's about bringing groups of teachers together. It's about providing substitutes. It's providing... And we have worked hard on this project. And under the assumption that what you had done in the past, those were still the rules. So we're willing to do it. But if we come back in 2 months and it's the same kind of thing, that's going to be that's going to be disconcerting to us.
I wonder if I might. I'm at a loss for memory as far as when we did the TS Gold decision making. The last time that we dealt with TS Gold was here. I don't remember.
It's Cheyenne Mountain.
How that? It wasn't that long ago.
No, it was just.
I think about a month ago.
Yeah.
Okay. One final question, Ms. Anthus. Do you have any concerns that the data you might get under their reporting system would be reliable and consistent and usable and valid?
I think given the reporting structure that you all approved at the last board meeting, which doesn't even require them to name the domains, this would work.
Okay.
And if we change that? If we went back to, I mean, there's talk in the, at the legislature about fixing what we did last month because of great
that,
disappointment.
Then we would have to reevaluate based on whatever it was changed to.
Because I think that's what folks need to be aware of, that that's probably coming forward, if not this year, next year. There was great disappointment in what we did.
And there are others that weren't disappointed and were very
well, I know, but
supportive.
There's a lot of talk out there that that was not what the legislature wanted to hear more than what we supported.
And we would have to evaluate based on, I mean, as we know, we had a robust 7-month discussion about the data reporting system, and we had lots of different options there. So I wouldn't want to say whether this system would meet a system we don't know yet.
No, but I want to know what happens in that event.
Then I think we would need to look at their reporting categories and the reporting categories that would be approved and see if it would be comparable in the way that they could report to us into whichever categories were selected, right? They would have to do a crosswalk to those components that are outlined in the law, and they've done some of that work.
Yes, Ms. Mazin.
I think I'm ready to vote. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, you bet. Is there a motion relative to the waiver?
I move to grant the waiver.
Okay, Ms. Masnick moves to grant the waiver.
I second.
It's been seconded. Would you please call the roll?
Board Member Flores.
Aye.
Board Member Goff.
No.
Board Member Masnick?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
No.
Board Member Scheffel?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
No.
Chairman Durham?
No. That motion is defeated by a vote of 4-3. Is there objection to the use of the reverse roll call? If you'd like to make a motion.
What?
We now need a motion.
On a waiver?
To reject the waiver.
Oh, wait a minute. But I thought that was...
No, she made a motion.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I need coffee.
Yeah. Don't worry.
I make a motion to reject the waiver request.
Why do we have to reject it?
The board will second that.
We got to do it the right way.
We probably should. Is there objection to the reverse of the previous roll call for that motion? Seeing no objection, that motion is adopted by a vote of 4-3.
Can they come back?
They certainly can, but I think we're going to have some discussions with staff about what we need going forward and perhaps putting some parameters and perhaps additional guidance out. So, Dr. Schaff.
When are we going to have those discussions?
Soon, I hope.
I just want to say that I support flexibility for our school districts. That's why I made this motion. And this is the kindergarten readiness, which statutorily just asks us to say yes. Asks us to tell the state, yes, they're ready, no, they're not. So this is the most simple thing we can do is say, you guys have been evaluating pre-kindergartners for kindergarten for a long time. You know what you're doing. Let's let them do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not sure I like the idea of a moratorium on flexibility.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think it's inappropriate for us to contemplate future legislation by those that may have questioned this board's action in previous months as a way or lens of understanding the waiver. I mean,
I think
that we were asked to vote on the waiver based on statutory requirements. And I think that I'm not sure what this school now does. What is their next recourse?
Well, I will simply say, speaking only for myself, that my vote was based on my perception that they did not meet the intent of the statute.
Well, what can they do to meet the intent of the statute so that our perception...
Notice, to meet the intent, they should give parents the notice that they ordinarily do through ordinary channels of other high visibility, high profile
issues. So if they do that, can they come back to this board and have us merely look at the waiver and not perceptions of intent of the law? I mean, can they? Would that be a next step for them? Or are they just stuck with TS Gold?
I think they have to make those decisions.
But can we hear their waiver again if they
certainly
go advertise the meeting? And I would encourage you to do that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. We'll now proceed to... Should we take a 5-minute break? Does everybody like one of those?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.